Good morning. This is, I believe, Epiphany Sunday. And I think the Epiphany is going to be in the title. Can the church be wrong? I got this title from an article that someone so graciously sent me. And it's, I think, reiterates a lot of what I may think and express. It came from a Baptist News Global. Now, unless you get real excited, it's not the traditional Baptist conservatives, Southern Baptists. It's more the liberal end of it and the open-minded ones of it. And I thought it was a rather good article. And so I'm going to share a lot of it. I'm going to put it in my own words, nevertheless. The idea is that I would like to put forth, one of the many, is that we are to, as we come to communion, we are to examine ourselves. And one of the questions that I'm going to ask, shouldn't the institution of the church or institutions examine themselves also? And so I'm going to read a reading from Matthew and also I think from 1 Corinthians having to do with communion. And these are Jesus' words here in the beginning. You have heard that it said to people long ago, you should not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brothers or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, Raca, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of hell fire. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or your sister has done something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled with them, and then come back and offer your gift. Paul says this about communion, that in 2 Corinthians, or 1 Corinthians, I'm sorry, 11:27, so then, whoever eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of sinning against the body and the blood of the Lord. Everyone ought to examine themselves before they eat and drink the cup. For those who eat and drink without discerning the body of Christ eat and drink judgment on themselves. A man's son came home from college for the weekend, and he asked him, how are things going? Good. And the dormitory? Good. They have always had a strong football team. How do you think they're going to do this year? Good. Have you decided what your major is yet? Yes. What is it? Communications. I think that's some of the problem we have today. We lack communication amongst difference. This is a message that is not to beat up on the church in general, but is to remind us that the church is an institution set up by man, and it is a temporary patch to help humanity. And I think sometimes we forget that it is not an eternal existence of something that will exist forever. Is to help us in the meanwhile. And I'm going to use this article, which I have previously mentioned, that was sent to me, We Were Wrong, to help illustrate this. And as I said, these are not the traditional conservative Baptists, but they are a group of, similar to what the DOC are, a group of autonomous churches working together, similar to the DOC. We are a group of churches and working together, even though we're different, we come together. And this is a group of Baptists, what I understand, that are the same. And this article came to me at a time in which maybe I was, I think sometimes maybe I go a little too far in my thinking, and that maybe I should tame it back a little bit. But this article helped me a lot more than the person sending it realized it, because there are other people like me and us, I include us in this, that think and lean forward and think the church has problems and it has time to change. Now, don't get me wrong, I believe the church is a very important part of society and should not be taken out of society in any way. It's a very important part. With all its problems and what it has over the history, it's still a very important part. But it should change and grow. That's my argument and has been for some time. My point this morning, or one of them, is that as individuals, we are asked by Jesus and by Paul to examine ourselves before we come to the Lord's table. And as I said, shouldn't institutions or denominational churches examine themselves also? Shouldn't the leadership at some point in time examine themselves also and see if they are not they accountable also? Shouldn't they look at themselves and humble themselves and come out from behind the Lord's table and stand in front of it and humble themselves and be accountable to Lord Jesus Christ in some way? Don't they have something to answer for? After all, they're just human, most of the time men. And the article, as I'm going to point out later, says this, many times it's white males that rule the church. There is different ways in which you can approach the Lord's table. Paul says that you are supposed to be examining yourself, and if you have aught with a fellow person, you're supposed to go and straighten that out. Jesus says the same thing. So basically, you're supposed to have a clean heart when you come to the Lord's table. But I think also you can come to the Lord's table and ask for help. That if you are having problems in your life, you can bring it to the Lord's table and ask for help. Or you can just be thankful. Just come there and be thankful. I think there's a various different ways, ever the two different ways or three different ways that I just thought of at a short time. So that I'm not implying that one has to be perfectly clear in heart before one comes to the Lord's table. I have a question as I'm moving on. As we grow in life, and our understanding that we have as we grow changes and takes new forms and we think differently, should I look back at how I previously had thought and believed and think of that as being wrong? Or should I see it as growth? I think so too. We should see it as growth. When does something become wrong? What makes something wrong? Well, how far do you ripple out? That's the question. I think probably a lot of things we do, we don't understand the ripple effect of them, and it can affect people. We say murder is wrong in the United States, and we believe that in our philosophy and our theology. But I'm going to ask the question, did the United States just murder Somali, or whatever his name was, by a drone and others with him? Is this wrong? Soldiers are asked to murder in the name of the United States. Are not we responsible for that also? Do not we share that in that guilt and in that of it all? Are we just totally free from it? We have taken God out of it in a subtle way, but the eastern side of religion, or the Middle East, ties that in with government. It's one. Does that make it less religious or less spiritual intent? What is wrong? What is right? Is it killing or is it murder?
Yes.
Isn't there theological views in the church which have done harm to souls? How much responsibility is that? Has it been Has this been used in a way, murdering as a method? If I destroy someone's person, take for instance the LGBTQ community, who is a big issue in our church today, and someone grows up in that church that is very conservative and doesn't want to recognize it and sees that as a terrible sin, and it kicks this individual out, and this individual goes out and hangs himself, what responsibility does that theology have?
Pretty hard to figure out. Like, according to Eastern religion, or Middle East there, a lot of their religion thinks it's good to kill people.
So well,
what are we supposed to do, let them kill us and not defend ourselves?
I'm not saying it's an easy answer. I'll be the first to admit it's very complex. Yeah. But both sides are killing in the name of an ideology. Yes, we are consider ourselves a better way of thinking. And I'm not going to say that that's not true. It is. I think we live in a nation that's free and we are blessed. Don't get me wrong. But you have to look at it a little bit deeper and try to understand what's going on. Both sides are defending an ideology in the best way that they know how. And we go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. We have been doing that ever since the story of Cain and Abel. I think Cain and Abel is a story about Cain rose up and was one of the ways you can look at it is that Cain rose up and was dissatisfied with Abel's way of thinking, and so it threatened Cain, and so he slew him in order to get rid of that idea. We have been doing that ever since. I'm not saying that we are not living in a good country and that you can argue for what we do. I'm not saying that. I'm simply saying that we need to examine ourselves also and look at what we're doing. We're not a holier-than-thou nation either. We're looking out for our best interests also, however that is. And it's interplaying in the world itself as a whole. It's complex.
And killing a person who has an idea that disagrees with us doesn't necessarily get rid of that idea.
No, it doesn't.
And so killing the person is not helpful, really.
I understand the necessity for war. Don't get me wrong. I want you to think. Go ahead.
The thing is in the act of war, at times you have to commit what some people perceive to be as a murder, where it's a deterrent from further action, military action. And that's perspective that the military leaders looked at in killing this man.
I understand. I'm not saying he was a good guy and we shouldn't have taken him out. I'm not going to argue that point. All I wanted to do is have you reflect a little bit deeper into the positions in which we are in this world. And it's not
nearly. I believe that killing's wrong, but sometimes it becomes a necessity in order for you or yours to survive.
Yes. Yes. That's one of the points I want to make. We're not free because we didn't commit the murder. It still affects our psyche as a nation, as an ideology, as a thought system. Yes, we're affected by it. Even though, what's his name, Soleimani, we killed him, I told Colin on the way over, I am automatically, my awareness went up as I traveled. Automatically did.
Yeah.
And I feel a sense of... Yeah. That they're going to retaliate in some way.
Somehow.
Yeah. So my awareness as I go through cross bridges and over underpasses is automatically went up. I am affected by what that murder, even though I had nothing to do with it. I am affected by it. That's one of the points that I want to make. We're not set free just because the soldiers who go over and commit and do a fight war, we bear the guilt and the complexity of that issue also, as you just said, Sharon. Yes.
And the basic commandment was, thou shalt not kill. And humanity has been killing each other and having wars for, 6,000 years maybe?
Ever since humanity has been around.
How many wars have we had to end wars? And they don't end. War doesn't seem to work to end war.
No.
I mean, we fought a war to end wars, and it doesn't.
I think if we're more truthful and more recognizing our responsibility of it, it may help heal and move things in a different way. But I want to move this over into the church. Has the church weaponized theology? The example I gave you was about an LGB person who got kicked out of the church and hung himself. Or...
yeah, they do that. In the Methodist church right now, we're taking a vote to decide they want to split because of the issues.
Yes.
And they should not allow gays inside the church, which is wrong. You know, God made us all. And I think the soul is inside us, whether it's a feminine soul, a masculine soul, whatever, you know,
yes. Right. Jesus brought the idea of loving all of humanity to the world. That's one of the big concepts that Jesus brought to the world, in which the church doesn't realize. And that's what this article is going to get at here in a couple seconds. He has 7 talking points.
Love,
we're going to move real quick.
No exceptions.
Huh?
Love one another, no exceptions.
Right. That's a very high level of something that we as humanity should try to achieve, beyond political ideologies and beyond theological perspectives and what have you. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's very difficult to do. Very difficult. And I'm not saying I have my human problems too. And
well, it doesn't even say like your neighbor, which is a different thing from love your neighbor.
Nor does it say tolerate your neighbor. It says love your neighbor. and that's everyone.
And I like the subtitle that says no exceptions.
So to weaponize a theological thought, we don't want to think in them terms. We don't like them type of terms. But in reality, we have done that in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, a weapon isn't always a gun.
Right. Sticks and stones will hurt me, but words will never hurt me. I never liked that idea. I think
I didn't
ever agree with that. Yes.
Words can hurt.
Yes. They can cut you right down to the quick. So we have done this. And this is some of what this article is pointing out. 3 words for the church, and it was written in 2019, but it's very relevant for 2020. Three words that the church does not want to utter is, we were wrong. And we have, sometimes we, and back in the course of history, we have fostered dialogue, civil dialogue, but skepticism has come back into the church, he says. And I think that's true. The universal church at large, and he's talking about the church at large, and so am I here, doesn't want to admit that it's wrong. And those words do not come off of the lips of religious folks, even though we should be the very first ones to be able to admit and to forgive our neighbor. We're taught that. But we don't want to do that. We find it very difficult to do that. He recalls a person that he knows in a church, in which the church was going to include the LGBTQ community. And this gentleman said, You're asking me to say that what I learned about the Bible from my parents and grandparents was wrong on this issue. And if I say they were wrong about this, then I have to ask what else they were wrong about, and I just can't do that. There you go. My point is the leadership should come in front of the Lord's table and be examined also. If we as individuals are, they should too. And so should the denominational theological perspectives also. But that has to happen in order for the church to survive. And there's more and more people like this gentleman here who are saying this. So I'm not off base in saying what I've been saying a lot along the way. It has to change. And our voices have to voice this in however much way we can. Is our faith, he says, so concrete and so unsecure that if we're wrong on just one thing, that it untethers our whole faith? Can we just examine one perspective of our faith and say, okay, we need to change that, without saying, as the gentleman just said, well, then that just tears everything else down? Can't we tweak something within our faith and in our belief system and still not lose it all? Some people can't. And that's what he's saying.
That is a strength, I think, of the Church of Christ, in that I think as a denomination, well, it was one of the first denominations to accept women as equal members of the congregation and capable of being a minister.
That's one of the things he's going to point out.
Okay.
So is our faith nothing but a house of cards? So if you pull one card out, the whole thing collapses. I think if you're on a growth curve, you don't have to worry about that. If you can admit that you're wrong. I had to, in my travels from the conservative Mennoniteism to where I'm at now, there was times I had to throw things right out in the garbage pail. Once things that I believed and thought was absolutely true, I had to get rid of them. I had to throw them out. They were no longer relevant. Christianity has, at some times, been a little more flexible than others. But we are taught today that everything, or in some settings, that everything that it can be learned from the Bible, I'm going to paraphrase what he says, everything that we can learn from the Bible has already been learned, and now you just have to memorize it. We have reduced it to sound bites, in which nice little sound bites, you can get a whole book full, but you can get a whole book full of little sound bites that you're supposed to respond to when someone asks you a question. So little sound bites. And he says that if we have reduced it to that point, then we truly are dead and our faith is futile, and we really truly are the frozen chosen. Examining and looking at it honestly is what we have to do. Honestly. We have to confess that we have been wrong. The church leadership has to confess that they are wrong in some areas of what they believe in a theological perspective. He says, one, that we were wrong about race. Now, short of being racist, I'm going to say, and most of us will say, that the church in the United States basically is run by white males and has been for some period of time in the conservative side of it. We think we are on third base and we can tell everybody how to get to home plate. That's where we're at. We have the answer. Listen to us and we'll get you home. That's heaven. That's how he explains it. He says that the original sin in the United States is slavery, and we have yet to confess that as our sin as a church. We have treated other races wrongly.
Yeah, but slavery can be a whole
Yes, it can. And we'll get to that in a second. And another number. And that's the reason, right, we are reaping the racial upheavals in which we have, or the racial divisions that we have now, he says. We haven't healed from the idea of slavery. You can take that as you want. Number two, he says, we were wrong to protect sexual predators. We know the church has, we'll say the Catholic Church, for instance, but even, as he says, in the Protestant Church, we have issues with sexual issues and abuse in the hierarchy. We have turned a blind eye to that. We can't even confess that we're wrong about that. The church is not immune. We fail to clean our own house, he says. And I think that's true. Number three, we were wrong about women. Here's a story that an interview that he had in a prominent evangelical pastor a few years ago told him about a story about his daughter who asked why she could not be a pastor. And he responded, "For the same reason I cannot have a baby." You were made that way. That's his issue. You were made to be less than. And this kind of reasoning is flat wrong. He says that there has to be a co-equal, as I've been saying here a while, co-equalness within the gender, whatever it is. And we have to see beyond sound bites of theology, simplistic sound bites. If you listen to a lot of on the radio, whatever, you can pick up a lot of sound bites that don't have I wonder if they really know what they are saying. Number four, we were wrong about what it means to be pro-life. The conservative side of the church has picked abortion as the main issue. But there's other morality and moral issues in the whole idea of pro-life. Genocide, starvation, access to health care, slavery, human trafficking, capital punishment, and injustice of war. The church has erred, he says, both in the spiritual and the political end of it. We have defined pro-life as just abortion. We have made pro-life too simplistic. It's a broader issue than that. I think he's right. Number five, we were wrong to exclude the people from God's grace because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. We all know that. We have done that. Perhaps, he says, the first step that the church should take is to listen to its own sons and daughters and to believe them when they say they did not choose their sexual orientation. And he said, that would be a start. I think that's true. We have to understand that sexuality is not simply male and female. We have wrongly expelled people who are not like that, who are not heterosexual. Number six, we were wrong to measure the kingdom of God in numbers more than in souls. I can remember having a conversation not too long ago about someone who mentioned that the church is counting nickels and noses rather than, making disciples. Churches are measured by their performance of giving and their attendance. We were wrong, number seven, to put our hope in politics. I think in the United States we have put, even though we have separate religion and government, it's closely tied together, more so than what I think we really realize. My question in the decision which our president has made to take out this man, how much did the evangelical whisper into his ears? End times, rapture, the end of the age, that's ushered in. There's people who believe that pushing the world to the end and the brink of war or into war will bring Christ back. And that is a large segment of evangelicals and a lot of conservative thought. That's scary to me. Why can't we learn to put more light at the table, different lights at the table?
You mean that people think that world wars would end up if Christ could be there?
They believe that by pushing the world to the brink of war or the beginnings of war, that Christ will be forced to return. The rapture will happen, they will be taken off, and the rest of you, of us, will be burned up, and they will come back and rule and reign with Christ. That's a real living idea that is happening today in the church.
Is there a name to it?
Rapture, dispensationalism. It's a huge, huge thing. I call that the biggest apostasy that the church ever started. Yes.
It was just yesterday that there was a news article where evangelicals down in the South, they're praising him for doing
it. Yeah. They're in the hopes of pushing the world to the end of the war, and even a branch of the Islamic faith has that way too, 12th Iman. That, yes, Connie.
I think the ones who are doing that are the ones who won't go.
No, they'll be raptured.
No, they won't. They are the worst. I mean, you stop and think. They're pushing for people to be killed for no reason.
Yeah.
That in itself is...
murder.
Yeah.
The very things in which the church is supposed to give out or promote, they're not. We need to examine ourselves, the church. I'm not saying us here. I'm saying the church in general. It must. And if you don't think that's a real idea, just go check it out. That idea of what I just said is alive and well. And someone who I'm not going to name is whispering in our president's ear. I know that because I listen to him on the radio. So that scares me. I don't like that. People need to stand up and say, be aware of what's happening and what people, why people are thinking what they're doing. We're not. We have become complacent. Where is our voice? Yes, we are afraid. I'll be the first to admit that as I engage with people, I have to be careful what I say because people are very edgy right now. And I don't think it's going to get any better for a while. And I'm not blaming anyone in particular. I think everyone has a responsibility for it. We all have share in this upheaval that's happening, this unsettling that's coming, or that is here. I will close by asking, if I find it, have we weaponized our voice for good or ill? How well are we communicating? Amen.
Thank you. one has.